Hi everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the Unofficial Marikai Podcast. And like I promised, I want to have one of my good friends here who's another Marikai fan. So, welcome. Welcome, David.
Hello. Oh my gosh. Thank you, audience. Thank you.
Yeah, and David is one big Marikai fan, and he probably got me into her on a bigger level, because I was kind of into the music, but not so much, you know. So today we want to talk about Mariah's her biography, and then also her early career, and then the failure of Glitter, in inverted commas, quote unquote, and also her voice loss, and also her voice and the changes she made in her career throughout the 90s and up to today. Okay.
Yes, there'll be a lot of detail into that, because there's a lot of questions about that by everybody, even though you might have heard this or that or seen something on the TV or the radio or
exactly
something.
Yeah, so we want to go more into detail about that. So right now we'll read a short bio about it. So David, you want to read this?
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, as we all know, her name is Mariah Carey, and sorry about what I just said, is that plenty of people think that her middle name is Angela, but in fact, she does not have a middle name. As she and her mother have both said, her name is Mariah Carey because her mother thought it would have been a good stage name, you know, Mariah Carey. So that's her full name there, and well, her birthday is March 27, 1970, so that makes her an Aries?
An Aries,
yes,
yeah.
It does.
I'm an Aries too. So.
Oh, that's good. Her birthplace is in Long Island, New York, and she still lives in New York. Her race, well, her mother was Irish, and her father was Black Venezuelan, a mix there. So, you know, she's a mix of all those things. And that's why, you know, people would be like, sometimes she would be on BET or stuff like that, and some people would make comments and say that she shouldn't be there because she's white, and how some people say she looks white, some people say she looks black. But in
I know some people who think she's Spanish, like people who don't know really much about
that
her.
That is true too, because
some people think she's Spanish.
Before she had a boyfriend, and he was from Venezuela, so many people think so too. But anyways, her parents are, her mother is Patricia Hickey, and her father is Alfred Roy Carey, and he died in 2002 on the 7th of the 4th. And you know, that has been a bad time in her life and everything, and she's had some tributes to him.
Through the Rain was actually a tribute to her parents, wasn't it?
Oh yes, it was. I mean, hello, if you all look at the video, y'all could see all those things, and you could see the ages and the type of people and the things that are going on in the video. And well, as we all know, well, as some of us know, she started a cancer fund, Alfred Roy Carey Cancer Fund, because that's what her father died from.
Mm-hmm.
Her siblings are her sister Allison and her brother Morgan.
And I heard some other sister got arrested for prostitution or something.
Well, that is true. The thing is that her sister has done drugs, so to speak, and she has also been arrested for prostitution in 2005. So, I mean, that's kind of weird, since her sister is Mariah Carey, you know, the famous Mariah Carey, so rich and expensive, you know, you think that Allison would be, you know, better off than that. But
I think, I was watching a show one day, and on the show they were asking a girl, right, she was talking about her mother and everything, and how her mother's on drugs and a drug addict and whatever. And they told her, you know, if you get onto the show and you earn money, do you think you could ever change your mother? Will that change your mother? And the girl
said
no. And you know, it was just so realistic, because she knew that just because I earn money and just because I become somebody big and somebody well known doesn't mean that I could change my family, you know.
Exactly.
So probably that is the whole story behind this.
Exactly.
Sister.
I mean, people think that it's just, you know, since she's rich, she could just do this and that, and her mother and her sister and everything would be perfect. But that's not the fact. Her brother Morgan There have been reports that he has died, but what happened is that he had a stroke. I think that was in 2004 or 2005. Reports that, well, he did have a stroke, but I'm not sure if he died. But he had a paralyzing stroke, which was very bad.
Is he like 20 something years old then, or something? Or at least there's a huge age gap because. Yes. And he's the one who helped to record.
Exactly. When she was trying to get into the business, her brother really used to take time and money and use the studio and everything to help her record her demos. And as the same demo she gave to Tommy Mottola that made her into what she is today. Her marital status, well, you know, everybody nowadays wants to know about her boyfriends and if she's engaged and if she wants to get married again and so on. So. But earlier in 1993, she got married to Tommy Mottola, which was
extremely ugly. And
oh my gosh, I did not say that.
On the BET, on BET Blueprint, when they were asking like word association, I think the man asked, you know, marriage, and she just said like no comment or something.
Yes, that is true. If you watch BET Blueprint,
in 2005.
Yes, in 2005 there was an interview with her and. There was word association and they gave her a few words which I can't remember right now, but they gave her that food and that is exactly what she said, and that's recent, so you can know what she's thinking right now.
Yeah, I mean, in other interviews too she said, you know, she doesn't have any plans on getting married or having babies because she doesn't think it's fair for
that
children
is true.
To
that
be
is true.
Brought up, you know, to as soon as they're born they're just into the spotlight one
exactly
time.
Because she divorced Tommy Mottola in 1997 and what they have been rumors that she was like kidnapped and she was captured and she was held captive in his big mansion that in his big mansion. So everybody thinks that, and you know, the music video for Honey and the remixes and stuff, you know, it shows her in a big house and on a chair, and you know, she escapes everything and then she jumps to the pool and changes and speeds away from the island on a water skiing,
on a jet ski. But
thing
is, I mean, like Honey was her first. Honey came from Butterfly, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and was it? Yeah, 97 Butterfly,
yes,
right? And,
Butterfly.
And the thing is, that signified a big break from Tommy Mottola.
Exactly, that entire album.
And you know, she actually had she had a lot more say in that album. You know, it's like I think that's what the video symbolizes, a break. It was, you know, freedom. So she was breaking free from
that
oppression, because it was oppression to her.
Exactly, and Tommy Mottola was about 20 years her senior, so you know that was very awkward. And as James said, it'd be bad for children to be married into that kind of thing and the celebrities and things like that. And besides that, she has had relationships with the New York Yankees shortstop Derek Jeter.
Who I have no idea.
Exactly. Sorry, we don't know who that is. And Mexican singer Luis Miguel. That is who I was talking about earlier. As James said. Yes, that's the Venezuelan. So that's Luis Miguel. And there have been rumors very, very recently this year that she was dating Mark Sudak, which is an employee at her record label.
Oh, and you know what they said? They said secret love was about Mark.
Exactly, yes.
Oh,
everybody,
you know,
said so.
Let's play a piece of secret love, because I think it was a bonus track, so it was only on one of the re-releases. I'm not sure. I'm not too sure, because I don't think it was actually on the original. So if you all have
it was on Mariah Carey Ultra Platinum Edition, which is re-released.
So
it was
on
that one.
Yeah, so if you all haven't heard it, let's just play a small clip of it. So that was Secret Love, and apparently there were rumors that Secret Love was about Mark Sudak. What is it? Yeah,
yes,
Mark
yes,
Sudak.
Yes.
Apparently he produced some songs on Emancipation.
Yes, as most of y'all will have the CD, y'all should have the CD, most of us have it, y'all will see on the different types of songs, y'all will see that some of these songs have his name there, right next to it.
Yeah.
Okay, continuing with it. Right now, she lives, well, if y'all have ever seen MTV Cribs, you know, the Tribeca apartment she has, which is right in New York City, close to that big tower that everybody knows. I forgot the name of it. She shows it out the window, and it's a very famous tower in New York. I know
she said why her apartment in New York is so special to her, because it was the very first apartment she bought all on her own.
With
her own money, yeah. So well, okay, good, so that's good.
Yes,
for her.
That's true. Her education has been in Harbor Fields High School, Green Lawn in New York. You know, most of her life is in New York. Her musical influences include Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder, Minnie Riperton, and Patti LaBelle. Well, we all know these people. Aretha Franklin, she's very good. Stevie Wonder, oh, he sounds really good. Minnie Riperton, everybody says her whistles sound like that. Patti LaBelle, that's where all that power comes from, isn't it?
But if I know some people might already know who Minnie Riperton is.
Well, yes, I know.
She's the woman who sang "Loving You," which was some big song, you know, "Loving You," and
yes.
And she does hit some whistle notes in that song. So, but in a lot of her songs, she does it. So that's where I got the inspiration for that certain aspect of her voice.
Just search her on the internet, you'll find her. But, well, unfortunately, she died when she was like 32 or something of breast cancer.
Yeah.
Well,
she had
a very good voice, but unfortunately, she died. Her musical idol is Stevie Wonder. And that's cool because if you look in 2005, there was a BET tribute to Stevie Wonder, and she sings one of his songs, "You and I," which I might include as one of her lowest notes, but she really likes Stevie Wonder. Some of Mariah's favorite things, like her favorite movie, is The Color Purple. Her favorite actress.
Oh, you know what? I think The Color Purple dealt with racism, huh? I think so, because it was like about black people, and I think it was about, I can't remember, I know I saw it, and I had Whoopi Goldberg and Oprah and all that in it, so probably that's why I'm so close to it.
I remember the name, but yes, that is true what you're saying, that is true. Her favorite actress is Marilyn Monroe.
Hopefully you're not hearing that.
Yes, hopefully you're not hearing that, but... But her favorite actress.
Favorite actress is Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
And her most prized possession is the white baby grand that she bought from an auction, and that once belonged to Marilyn Monroe. I think she showed it in Cribs, but I think, you know, she was very protective of it.
No. She said that she had it, but it was in another room, and she did not show it, because if y'all noticed in MTV Cribs, she said she is very, as you're just saying, she's very protective of that piano. That was one of her very prized possessions, and I think there was one room,
her bedroom
that
she did not show us.
I mean... Yeah. She didn't want to show us everything. I mean, that
she
said nothing to
us. Yeah,
know.
She said, yeah, good. That's what she said. You know, if she shows us everything, then she just leaves nothing for herself.
And that is
on her own.
That's a very good aspect of her personality,
I would say.
Her favorite actor is James Dean. Her favorite color is pink, obviously. I mean, wow. Her favorite album that she made, it's a tie between Butterfly and Charm Bracelet for obvious reasons, because Butterfly was her. Was like her first emancipation period,
mm-hmm.
From her husband and his music empire. And Charm Bracelet details a lot of things that have happened throughout her life, and the passing of her father and stuff like that.
Yeah, that Charm Bracelet was the time when her dad died.
I mean, there was a song on it.
Sunflowers.
Sunflowers. Exactly. Same name has her father's name in it. Look at that. Her favorite album by another artist is Musicarium by Stevie Wonder.
Stevie.
Yes. Her favorite song of hers is, well, favorite songs of hers are Vanishing,
which
Underneath the Stars.
Vanishing is one of my favorite songs from her debut album.
Oh my gosh, doesn't everybody love Vanishing? That's a very nice song, yes. Underneath the Stars, My Saving Grace, and Clown. And it's shown in her music videos and in her songs itself, because Underneath the Stars did not have a music video. These have very significant meanings in them, of My Saving Grace. I mean, who was there to pull her through and stuff like that? In Clown, that deals with her relationships to other people. Although it deals mainly with Eminem, it also deals with relationships in general. And in The Stars, well, it's a love song. Vanishing, it deals with
loss of love. But the
yes.
thing is, Vanishing, you could just interpret it on so many levels, because Like, you know, it could be like a child talking to their parent when their parents, or it could be a lover talking to another lover. So that's why I like Vanessa. You could just interpret on so many
that
levels.
That is true. And I mean, she helped write that song. She wrote it. So, you know, that's just to show how deep her personality is and how she is as a person.
I think Vanessa was on her demo, you know.
Yes, the
legend
has it that it was exactly on her demo.
I know these songs from her debut that were on her demo. Some of the Vision of Love, All in Your Mind. There was one more I'm pretty sure of. I can't remember right now. But a lot of the songs that were on her demo were on her debut album. Although they were changed a lot, because she hardly had any seen how she wanted things to be.
At the beginning, like that, yes.
Yeah, okay, so...
Her favorite video of hers is Honey, Heartbreak, and Heartbreaker. And she says that they were most fun to make. I mean, Honey, the video, I mean, she jumps off a balcony into a pool and she goes on a water ski. So those things are fun. I mean, hello. And Heartbreaker, that was just a funny video in the whole sense. I mean, Heartbreak and everything. And how she was fighting scene and everything. And the movie and everything. It was very good. The least favorite video of hers is Visions of Love.
And tell them the story behind that.
Exactly. There's a story behind that. I don't know how much people know this actually. What happened was that in the Visions of Love video, there's a part where her hair is all out and she's in a white top and I think it's a black pants in a blue background, and she has one of those silver mics with her. And what happens is that she's singing and she puts her hand back by her head, and it brings it back forward to the microphone. And when she does that, on her left arm, on her left hand, a piece of her hair kind of sticks it, because, you know, like when you have chemicals on your hair, when it's moist, it will stick to your hand. And that stuck to her hand when she was coming back to the mic. And it looks like if her hair was falling out. And I mean, who wants to have that in a music video? And
on top of it, your first music video.
Exactly, that is very bad. But nobody wanted to change it, so they produced the video just said, go and look at the video right now, and you would see that. Which is a very bad thing. She did not like that at all.
Her favorite food is pasta and salad.
I come to think of it, there's a recent rumor that her diet is a purple diet, you know, like grapes and vegetables. Well, purple.
But then again, she is on tour, so she'll have to try and keep
exactly.
in shape.
So she needs to try and keep in shape, and there's a reason behind that, which I'm not exactly sure, because I'm no nutritionist and I don't want anybody going and going on a purple diet. Her favorite place to vacation with friends is Capri, Aspen, Barbados, and Guam, which is very interesting. Think of that yourself. But not
as a I know for Christmas, I think she likes to go Barbados to get away from the cold.
Yes, that is true. She does like to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think in Aspen or Capri or somewhere, she plans to buy a hotel or something so she can move to live there. And there were rumors about that earlier this year.
I know. I think 3D Room was actually filmed in Capri. And she recorded it in Capri too, I think.
Oh, that is cool.
So I'm not too sure about that.
Think upon that, yes. Her favorite animal are lambs and dolphins. I mean, hello, who does not love dolphins? Our lambs, that's what she calls her fans. I mean, come on. Well, she has a dog and some cats and stuff like that. That's cool. Her favorite insect is a
guess
butterfly.
What?
I mean, hello, everybody knows that. She has a CD named Butterfly. How much obvious is that?
And then the butterfly accessories and all that.
Exactly, and her ring and everything.
And it's symbolic to freedom, because you know butterflies are free.
Yes,
and
they're such nice creatures with wings and everything. Our favorite album cover is Rainbow. Think about that.
Very sexy.
Yes, to say the least. Her favorite candy is watermelon Jolly Ranchers.
Her favorite shape is a heart shape.
Yes,
her sport is swimming. Place
to
spend money on vacation.
Oh my gosh.
Her season is summer. Her favorite year was 97, which was the year of her emancipation, in a way, when she got away from Tori Matola. That's when her divorce was official.
And I think it was her second biggest year with, like, awards and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it is. And her favorite tour was a butterfly in Hawaii, but I only actually saw one thing from that, and that was Emotions in Hawaii.
And it was so much on that. I need to research that in truth.
My favorite kind of musical duet was the Fancy Remix with ODB and One Sweet Day with Boyz II Men.
Yes, I mean, in the New Year's thing this year, past New Year's, she had that video playing in Times Square. She had it, and it was with the same one with ODB, but ODB passed away, unfortunately. But it was with ODB, and she sang it and everything, which was really fun.
And my favorite cartoon when she was small was the Flintstones and the Smurfs. My favorite drink... it's lemonade and red wine.
Trust me, she loves red wine.
And her favorite subject in school was creative writing. I heard that, and I guess that's where she gets her writing skills
exactly.
from.
Exactly.
And, okay. So,
yes.
Enough about that, right?
Yes.
So, okay, so let's see what we move on to next. So, okay, now we're going to talk about the musical themes of her songs and her lyrics, and the majority of her lyrics, the theme is about love, but she also sings about racism and death and spirituality. I guess death referring to like terrorism, and also her father.
Yes,
and spirituality. Yeah, spirituality, like My Saving Grace.
Yes, yes.
And there was one more, like there's got to be a way deals with racism. Actually, there's got to be a way deals with all three of these. This is about the world today, and you know, and how.
Oh yes, literally lyric. And look how long ago that was. That's 1990. Yeah. That's 1990, 1991, and so, that still applies to the
exactly.
world.
Exactly, and she has said a lot of her work is autobiographical. Autobiographical. and we have a quote from Time magazine, and they wrote, "If only Mariah Carey's music had the drama of her life. Her songs are often sugary and artificial, neutral, sweet soul, but her life has passion and conflict." I don't think that's true at all, because you could actually hear in the lyrics that a lot of the lyrics, they do pertain to her life directly.
Okay, I would bet you that right now the person who wrote that was fired. Because, I mean, that statement from Time magazine, it has some truth to it, but they might take it from one type of song, or they might take it that from the person them, from Mariah herself, maybe they might like or something, and they might take it from one or two of the songs that might not have that might have certain parts that do not deal with reality, so to speak, because like the names of her albums, you know, usually they're nice words, they're one word, and they remind you of something to make you happy, like charm bracelet or butterfly or
music
emotions, musical, you know, things that are happy. So, you know, like, see,
come
same
to think
thing.
Of it, really, actually, most of the albums are just like one word.
Exactly. Or phrase or something. Like,
yeah.
Like same thing on BET, the special. She was like, oh, how everybody expected, yes, oh, how everybody expected the masturbation maybe to have one name, like, I don't know, something like unicorn. Because, you know, it's supposed to be something happy and something magical, and it's supposed to be one word, so, you know.
But,
that
but the funny thing is, like, her emancipation actually came almost 10 years prior to the release of The Emancipation of Mimi. It came out in 97.
Yes, that is true.
You know, just 2 years short of 10 years. Of a decade, you know.
Yes,
so
yes.
So she was emancipated a long time ago. I just think in this album, as she said, you know, she put in her all, and it was everything she had, and look how well it did. So
exactly.
That just goes, you know, whatever you put in is what you will get out. Mm-hmm. But I could understand what they mean by sugary and artificial, because like if you listen to some of her songs, like okay, One and Only, talking about probably one some of her newer songs, like One and Only and So Lonely and like these songs are kind of down with love, and
mm-hmm,
you did
mm-hmm.
me wrong. Like some of them are kind of sugar coated, and in a way, you know, like
I know the lyrics, the words
yeah,
she used.
But the emotion is there, and the message is still there. You know, I mean, you can't have and you can't expect R&B singers to sing angry songs. You know,
exactly. I mean, so. Yes, her life, her songs are totally about passion. Hello, and there is conflict in her life, but that's not the main point of her life. They say but her life has passion and conflict. Her life is not about her life.
Exactly. So I think that's what people have to take into consideration.
Because
her songs have messages. All of her songs have messages. I've not heard one Mariah Carey song that she wrote for herself that didn't have some kind of message.
Exactly.
So okay, let's read more. Carey's output makes great use of electronic instruments. Okay, blah blah blah. Talking about pop and whatever, and talking about how she has been inspired by the work of musicians such as Stevie Wonder, and also a lot of her songs had a heavy piano bass set. And apparently in 2005, I didn't know about this, in 2005 there was an album released called Butterfly Melodies, which was a tribute album containing piano renditions of some of his songs. I'm guessing some of the more famous songs.
I have never heard of that before. Nobody ever mentioned it, nothing. Never
Me
seen
either.
It.
So then they also talk about some of her remixes, and the Dream Lover remix was one of the best dance remixes in history, and
yes,
blah blah blah.
Yes.
And oh, and they also said how she was one of the she was a big pioneer. She was one of the first people who pioneered changing lyrics for remixes instead of just doing over the song
with
faster beats
beat
and all that. Yeah, she was actually one of the pioneers who helped to spearhead the practice of recording entirely new lyrics for remixes.
Okay, and come to think of it, people say that on Emancipation of Mimi and the Ultra Platinum Edition on the cover, the pose that she does is very Beyonce-like, because you know the pose makes you look tall and makes you look very like a blossoming flower, you know, very altered, very there, you know, very bold picture. And people say how she took that from Beyonce. Now the thing is that, like the same thing that he just said, how she pioneered things like making over the lyrics itself for the remix or something. People think that, as I said, people think that it is from Beyonce. She got that, but she actually is naturally like that. You would see certain poses with her, she's just like that. She has, but just because she puts it on a cover and everybody's like, oh, that looks like Beyonce, doesn't mean she took it from Beyonce. Like, there's this picture I remember that she took in her home, and it was with her dog, and she had on her blue pants, and it made her look very tall. If people saw that picture, what they would say, that's from Beyonce too. That's not a very good thing to say. She's a very independent person, and she, look how she has pioneered that. And people, I bet most people did not know about that.
Yeah, exactly. People, you know, I guess one thing that comes with being in the spotlight and having so much commercial success is also negativity. So,
that
you know,
true,
you have to expect
true.
That. You can't expect it to all be, you know, sunshine and, you know, praise Mariah Carey, because what the media loves more than the good things is the bad things, you know.
Yes.
Her artistry, she said that from childhood she was stimulated by soul and R&B musicians like Billie Holiday, and she has a lot of influences, and she also used to delve in gospel.
Yes.
She had some favorite gospel singers and all that. Oh, right. And then when she started to go into the hip-hop scene and started to record more hip-hop tracks or hip-hop influence tracks, people were saying, you know, she was just making an attempt to take advantage of the popularity of hip-hop.
Yes,
so, you know,
yes,
so in other words,
she
was trying to market herself more in hip-hop, so she would just sell more. And she countered that by saying, you know, people just don't understand that I grew up with this
exactly.
kind of music around me, you know. So this was also, because people just think, you know, if you're recording one style of music for such and such a period of time, you could never do anything else because that's just not your genre. And we have learned that,
exactly,
you know, that she can do more than one
genre. She has said it. I mean, look at plenty of interviews. She has said it time and time again. She's a very diverse person. She does not stay in one type of business. She does not stay in one type of music or business. She does many types of music, gospel, R&B, you know, she does a lot of different things, and like in businesses too. She does singing, obviously. She does movies, and she has a fashion line with like clothes and perfume and many other things, which we'll talk about in a later episode.
So yeah, you know, she is extremely diverse. And so moving on with artistry. Oh, critics said that her first album, her debut album, Mariah Carey, it was very similar to the style of Whitney Houston. And well, everybody knows that, you know, that throughout both of their careers, especially Mariah, she has been compared to Whitney a lot because Whitney came before. So, you know,
yes,
so
yes.
Her level of success has always been compared to Whitney Houston and even Celine Dion. And, you know, we have some quotes here with a lot of criticism about Mariah and Celine Dion and Whitney Houston and how their songs are and how their songs sounded.
Exactly, and that they are like groomed and airbrushed and overblown to perfection. I mean, come on.
And okay, so apparently Mariah, Oh, good. So a writer named Lucy O'Brien attributed the comeback of Barbra Streisand's old-fashioned showgirl to Mariah and Celine Dion, and described them and Houston as groomed, airbrushed, and overblown to perfection.
Exactly.
Which I guess sometimes they are overblown to perfection, but what more can you expect, especially when you're in the spotlight?
Exactly,
all the time.
And they don't necessarily always do that themselves. I mean, if they do one thing, the media might come and change it up and make it look even more perfect. And you have to take all those things into consideration when you're writing something like this.
And also, her transition, remember how she was more R&B and subtle R&B, and then
that
transitioned to a lot
that
of pop, and hip-hop was actually to get away from that, from the old-fashioned showgirl.
Exactly.
That whole,
she likes
that
all
whole
types
image.
Of music. I mean, look, she liked a lot of rappers and things, like when she collaborated on the song The Roof. Now, that is one of her least popular songs. If you might not know about it, it has a video. It was made in 1998. If y'all look at that song and at the video, the lyrics are very good because I listen to that song daily myself. If y'all look at the video and everything, she collaborates with other people and she's very diverse in that thing. She's not saying she's on one thing and she's trying to perfect that type of music.
Yeah.
And she sings and copies everybody and tries to make everybody look good and all kind of nonsense like that.
And the thing is, you know, she was also a step above Whitney and Celine.
Celine and those people.
By, she used to co-write all of her songs, and she was even heralded as, quote-unquote, the songbird supreme. So, okay, so now we want to move on to her biography, which is really what this show was about.
Yes.
So, yeah, we kind of talked about,
her generally and
yeah,
different aspects of her life and singing.
And her music, yeah, her musical style, but now we want to talk about her bio, and she actually has an extremely interesting story. I know the whole thing about being brought up in a society where racism was extremely prevalent, and
exactly,
she was half black and half white. So, you know, so she suffered a lot about racism, so I guess that's why she writes. You see, the thing is, I seriously believe that the reason she writes so much is because she has gone through so much also.
That is true.
So she draws from all of her life experiences.
That's how she expresses herself. I mean, you can't just sit down there and let all of it build up and then one day go crazy. Like the quote-unquote breakdown she had. Anyways,
so yeah,
we'll talk about that later.
I don't think it's fair for people to say, you know, when she writes, there's no emotion behind it. Because, I mean, she draws from her life experiences and she writes on those kinds of things that have happened to her, you know?
Exactly, yes.
So, okay, so let's go through the biography really quickly. The best-selling female performer of the 90s, Mariah Carey rose to superstardom on the strength of her stunning 5-octave voice and elastic talent, who moved easily from glossy ballads to hip-hop-inspired dance pop. She earned frequent comparison to rivals with Whitney and Celine Dion, but did them both one better by composing all of her own material. Born in Long Island, New York on March 27, 1970, Carey moved to New York City at the age of 17, just one day after graduating high school, to pursue a music career. There she befriended keyboardist Ben Margulies, I'm guessing that's how you pronounce
it,
with whom she began writing songs. Now, this was a part of her life where she was really, really devoted, and she wrote all of these songs, and
that is true.
And
yes,
more than half of these songs on, as we mentioned before, more than half of these songs on her debut album, Mariah Carey, actually
came from
demos. Her demo CD, right? So I mean, that's just telling you how much passion there was. And personally, I actually think in terms of vocal strength and in terms of the messages that she was sending out, I actually like Mariah Carey the most for that as her debut.
Yes.
And I think even though she wasn't allowed to have a lot of control over the thing, over the musical production, she did have control over a lot of the writing techniques, because she wrote these songs before she was
exactly,
even in a contract. So these songs were about her life before she was this superstar and this, you know, big girl. So I think that's why I like that album so much. Okay, her big break came as a backing vocalist on a studio session with dance pop singer Brenda K. Starr, who really sang the original I Still Believe, and Mariah covered that. who handed Carrie's demo tape to Columbia Records head Tommy Mottola at a party. Everybody should be familiar with this story.
Yes, I mean, this is like bona fide legend. Everybody knows what happened. See, Tommy Mottola got the CD, he listened to it on his way back to his home hotel, and then he got really surprised it was good. He turned back, she wasn't there. He found her, I think it was the next day, I'm not sure.
And he signed her. He found immediately. Her,
and yes, immediately signed her, which and was very good.
The thing is, like, look how a girl who grew up, who was, let's say, poor, you know, because they definitely weren't rich. So let's say about probably middle class, poor. So a girl who grew up as a poor person, and you know, it just goes to show that when God gives you a gift, it's to use it for the best.
Exactly.
And God gave her a huge voice. And the thing is, her voice is so distinguished. It's like, it doesn't sound like anybody else I've ever heard.
I mean, people say with concerns to singing that singers have, I mean, everybody has a, well, okay, most people have a voice, and singers, the thing is that everybody is born with a certain type of voice. The thing with Mariah Carey is that she has gotten the singing gene from her mother. I mean, she was an opera singer, so that accounts for many things. As her singing stems from opera. You could sing different types, but singing stems from opera. She got training from her mother and everything. And then when she grew up, you know, all of that, just her memory, the muscle memory, just learned how to do this and that. And just finally, she got that unique voice that we know her to have today. Because if you listen to her, you could never, ever compare her to anybody else in, like, type of voice. There are some people that, you know, their voice will sound similar to this one or that one, but she's just totally unique. I mean, you all have to agree on that.
Yeah, her voice, I think her voice is extremely unique, and again, she is one of the huge pioneers for, you know, those high notes and everything.
Yeah.
So Thomas was just struck by her talent, so he went and signed her the day after, and she began working on her 1990s self-titled album, which was really her debut, and it was heavily promoted, and it was chart-topping, and
yes,
and the amazing thing is that from this album, she released 4 singles in the US, and yes, each of those 4 singles were number ones.
Amazing.
And the thing is, it's a feat, it's something huge to have your very first single become a number one, far less your first 4 singles. I think that is what probably secured her rise to superstardom from the start. So, you know, hands down, because of that huge start. There has to be something special about you.
You know, I mean, people label it as an overnight success, which is true. I mean, in that short space of time, in that short period of time, she has had 4 singles already, and it all went number one in the US, which is amazing, and that's on one album. And she's new. I mean, there's rarely instances where people take a new artist very seriously and love them like that. There are few instances of that.
Exactly.
They have to take their time and grow into a popular person.
And that year was the year she won 2 Grammys, which were her only 2 Grammys until this year's Grammys. She has 5 Grammys, because I think at this year's Grammys she won 3. So these were actually her only 2 Grammys up to this year. So imagine that, you know, your first year coming out and you win 2 Grammys,
you know?
Which is the musical, in the music world, that is the highest honor.
Yes. So but we'll talk about all her awards later.
And expectations were high for her second album, which was 1991's Emotions. And of course, it didn't disappoint. And
exactly,
everybody should know about how Emotions did. Emotions was her 5th number one album. And apparently, that was a record. You know,
5th number one from an album.
Yeah, and it was just consecutive.
Yes.
All number one so far were consecutive. And then she released Can't Let Go and Make It Happen. And those all landed in top 5. Which, again, is another feat. Just
exactly.
The top 5 is a feature.
Amazing.
Yeah, you understand. So her next release was 1992's MTV Unplugged, which generated a number one cover of the Jackson 5's I'll Be There. And everybody knows about that. And Trio Lorenz.
Exactly.
And, you know, so that song was huge.
Yes, and that CD itself was very definitive for her and
mm-hmm.
her voice at,
yes,
that,
yes, yes,
at that time, because, you know, everybody thought that when she was doing all these high notes and everything, it was just studio generated, because, you know, back then it was very hard to believe that somebody could do Anna. It was thought to be this very rare thing. Like, Minnie Riperton was this once in a lifetime person. You can't get her for another million years like a comet. But when she did that album, MTV Unplugged, it is obviously live, and she did all those high notes just like she went in these songs and everything, and they were amazing and broke all of those rumors.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, so in June of 1993, she married Tommy Mottola, and months later she released her third full-length album, which was Music Box, which was the biggest on album up to this date.
I think Emancipation of Mimi rivals that, but Music Box.
No, Emancipation of Mimi is like 6 times platinum, you know. I think Music Box went into 20-something times platinum.
That's true. I think.
Like, I think Mariah Carey is like 14 times platinum or something.
Yes, that's true.
And I think Music Box went into 20s.
But we'll discuss all of that later in the show.
So the first two singles from Music Box were number one, Stream Lover and Hero, and Carrie's first tour followed and was widely panned by critics. Undaunted. So in other words, critics said that her first tour was it wasn't as good as she probably could have been. But she resurfaced in 1994 with her holiday release titled Merry Christmas, and everybody knows of the huge success of What I Want for Christmas Is You.
Exactly.
And I mean, we grew up on that song, right?
Exactly. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, so in 1995, she released Daydream, and that reflected on her new artistic maturity. And the first single, Fantasy, debuted at number one, and this set a record that made Mariah the first female artist and just the second performer ever to accomplish the feat.
Yes.
Of, you know, of having what? Wait, that means that that a female artist had never had her single debut at number one ever.
Oh my gosh, look at
that.
Yeah,
I'm not reading this, I don't understand, I'm comprehending.
Oh my
gosh. And only the second performer ever to accomplish that.
That means Amanda did before and she's the first one.
Oh my
gosh. That's amazing.
You see,
wow.
She broke so many records.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the follow up One Sweet Day with a collaboration with Boyz II Men was another number one. So and this before We Belonged Together in 2005, this was actually the longest running number one of all time. It ran for 16 weeks at number one. I'm not sure if it was consecutive. It doesn't say consecutive. But I know it ran for 16 weeks. And I think We Belonged Together was 18, was it?
Yeah, it was at 18 or 20-something. I'm not sure. Because
as we
will discuss later, like many other things, the charts people, many people have a problem with saying, like, what are the charts? There are so many different charts for different types of music and then different types of, like, different areas of the country. Many different things decide on charts and different companies and everything. But we discuss all of that later.
But the main chart is the Billboard Top 100.
Exactly.
/ 200, because they're
that's
they're
what
the
they
same
count.
Thing. So yeah, so that is what they count as a number one single. If it reaches to number one on that chart, then it's definitely a number one. So after separating from Mottola, she returned in 1997 with Butterfly, which was another staggering success and her most hip hop flavored recording to date.
Exactly.
As you said, that was her first emancipation. That was really emancipation.
You
of
know,
Mimi.
From her husband and all those
yeah.
things. I mean, look at the Honey video. Y'all all know the thing about that.
Because I think she said, you know, she just felt trapped. I think that I saw something, an interview, and they talking about the house where she lived with him. And she used to tell her friends, I feel trapped when I'm
yes,
in this house.
Yes, that is true. That is
true. I something
it was
like
a big, it was a big like mansion thing, and she always felt trapped when she went into it. And she would, and he would boss her around and things like that. You all should know the story.
Okay, number one, a collection featuring her 13 previous chart-topping singles. So in 7 years, she has accumulated 13 number ones,
yes.
which is probably unheard of for a female artist ever.
Mm-hmm.
Singles, as well as The Prince of Egypt, When You Believe, a duet with Whitney Houston, effectively pairing the two most successful female recording artists in pop history, followed late the next year. And When You Believe was also there to cut the rumors about this huge rift and competition between Whitney and Mariah.
Yes.
With Heartbreaker, the first single from her 1999 album Rainbow, Carrie became the first artist to top the charts in each year of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Heartbreaker was another number one. You might say that in every year of the 90s, she topped the charts. She was number one in every year. And in some of the years, she was number one more than once.
Mm-hmm.
the record also pushed her ahead of the Beatles as the artist with the most cumulative weeks spent atop the Hot 100 singles chart.
Look at that.
So so yeah, 16 weeks along with everything else. So I guess she spent a few months cumulatively.
You know, so people say that decade 1990 to 2000 was Mariah's.
That was her prime. That was definitely her prime. And then now we're going into the breakdown. The breakdown.
Everybody says that. The 2000s to the 2004 was just, you know, all big empires fall someday. And this is what they say happened to Mariah.
Apparently, the rumor is, this. I don't know how true this is, because I seriously can't say yes, she did sign an $80 million deal, because I don't ever think that they made it official. It was a huge rumor, because remember, I was watching VH1 one day back then, quite back then, and they said something about, you know, Mariah Carey has signed this huge record-breaking deal for like $80 million.
That is true.
I think it was a rumor at that time anyway, right? So, I'm not too sure how true. We're trying to fix the microphone.
Yeah, sorry.
Good. I'm not too sure how true that one is, right? But the rumor is that it was an $80 million deal with Virgin, the biggest record contract ever of all time.
I'm not sure about this one, but there was the when we go further, I'll show you that in Guinness World Book of Records, she actually has a record concerning money. This one, it would have been in Guinness World Book of Records, and it isn't. It would have been some kind of record somewhere, but $80 million.
$80 million is madness. That's just $20 million shy of $100 million.
Because nobody knows the exact amount. That's just rumor.
$80 million is madness. When just to see it is nothing big. It's like, oh yeah, $80 million. When you think about it, that's a lot of money, right?
Exactly.
So that was the biggest record contract, ever. And then in 2001 was when Glitter was released. Now. This is when critics started really going at it, you know, with Rainbow. They said Rainbow wasn't up to par at all, and I probably agree a bit, but not so much, right? Critics, I think critics just had a go at it, because for such a long time she was at the top, so they needed to bring her down.
Exactly.
You know, they probably needed to bring her back down to earth, right? So now Glitter was released, and the huge misconceptions that Glitter was just so bad that it didn't do very famously at the box office.
Yeah, under $4 million in total US gross.
But the thing is, Glitter was released on September 11th, and everybody knows what happened on September 11th.
Exactly.
So,
who's going to see a movie then?
Exactly. Parents weren't taking their children to see a movie about a woman who was struggling in 1980s and trying to make her name.
You know?
Which was literally, Glitter was kind of autobiographical in a way. Because it was kind of like the story Mariah had, you know, trying to make it big. And people aren't going to take their children when terrorists are on the loose.
You know, I mean, plenty of people like to say how she blames it all on the terrorists on September 11th and stuff like that. But I mean, you have to admit, I mean, we're not saying it was totally that fault. I mean, the movie, probably some people didn't, well, obviously some people didn't like it, but I mean, September 11th had a major impact. I mean, look at other movies around that time and like after that time and stuff. What movies after that time did good?
And the thing is, I think critics just had a field day with it, because they took advantage of September 11th. The critics took advantage of it because of September 11th, the film didn't do so well, right?
Yes.
If I think the film would have done well, fairly well, because it's Mariah Carey and she has a namesake for her, right?
Yes.
Even if people find the movie look like crap, they would have gone to see it because it had Mariah Carey,
exactly,
right? Just to see what it was about. And I think critics, because of September 11th, they took advantage of that whole situation, and they just had all these things to say that the movie was so bad and the movie was a disaster.
I guess they needed an
excuse to account for why it did so badly.
Yes.
So you know, so the excuse is that the movie was just crap.
But she can't act.
Exactly. Yes. And the real reason was September 11th. In my eyes, I think that had a huge part to play.
Exactly.
Probably not 100%, but there was a huge part to play.
Exactly.
And then in
the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, the soundtrack. Now, okay, David, I'll let you take it away here.
Okay. Yes. Okay. The soundtrack, Glitter. Okay, let me say one thing one time. Glitter is a soundtrack, not an album. There are two major differences between a soundtrack and an album. Because apparently everybody says Glitter and the album. Glitter and the soundtrack. I mean, yeah, the songs were hers and stuff like that, but that does not necessarily mean that it's an album. And some, there were probably one or two songs that were in the movie that were not hers. I mean, hello, come on, the album. Look, they even have me sing it. It's not an album, it's a soundtrack. The soundtrack, it did bad. They say it struggled to make gold sales, and I think gold is above 100,000. I mean, it was probably the it is the worst album, the worst soundtrack that she ever had on the shelves and stuff like that. Because I mean, the songs on it, people say that the songs were bad, she didn't sound good, and you
again,
know,
looking for an excuse to account for bad sales.
Oh, yes, and everybody said that most of the songs were breathy, you know, it was all, so you know, how she lost her voice and all kind of thing, which we'll get into right now, because that album, the songs were, look at like, Lead the Way, that has her longest note ever, 20 seconds, and another song, I forgot what's the name of it, on that same album, I think it had one of her highest notes, I think. Is that I had one of her highest notes and one of her lowest notes. I mean, what more I want? One of her longest notes and one of her notes at the top of her range or the bottom of her range. I mean, what more do you want? That she sung very well on that album, on that soundtrack. Excuse me for saying album. It's stuck in everybody's mind, but as I said, it's a soundtrack. But anyways,
yeah,
go
so
ahead.
So it was a soundtrack, and so it had to do with her, but not directly. It wasn't her album.
Exactly.
So that's a huge misconception that Glitter was her album, and it did so badly, and Mariah Carey did badly.
You know,
and in truth and fact, it was the soundtrack for the movie Glitter. And because Glitter didn't do so well, how could you expect the soundtrack to do well?
Yes, exactly.
People don't really buy soundtracks after they go and see the movie and they like the songs in the movie, right?
Exactly.
So you can't expect people to buy a soundtrack of a movie that they
didn't like.
Hear.
Oh yeah, they didn't even see.
Yeah, they didn't even see, so
come
they didn't
on.
Hear anything, right? So then, this was her personal and professional meltdown, also happened in 2001. I think it was close. I can't remember if it was after or before the release of it. I think it was a little bit after, wasn't it?
It was after.
Yeah, and apparently she had a personal and professional meltdown that included rambling, suicidal messages on her website. An appearance on TRL where, clad only in a t-shirt, she handed out popsicles to the audience. And last but not least, this stupendously awful movie, Glitter, and its attendant soundtrack.
Okay, I have to take it over from here. Excuse me, I have to take it over from here. Let's start off with all this nonsense, to say the least. Okay, personal and professional meltdown. What is a meltdown? Meltdown is like a nuclear plant meltdown, a ice meltdown, the ice cap melting down. I mean, you can't just say meltdown. What really happened to her is that she was suffering from stress
and overwork.
Exactly.
And
overwork and
all
not
kind getting
things.
Enough sleep.
That affects 23 hours a day out of 24 hours a day. You can't be working that much for like months on end. You can't be doing that. What happened was that she was physically stressed out, and that affected her in every aspect of her life, including emotionally. So, I mean, you must have to stop and go to hospital somewhere. I mean, come on, you can't go on like that forever. The ramblings, as I said, it affected her emotions and everything. Ramblings, there was no such thing as ramblings. She was edgy and stuff like that. I mean, you're overworking her.
Were there suicidal?
Suicidal messages on her website. What happened is that I saw what she wrote and what she left on the website about things like
people said that
she was slitting her wrist and she was threatening to jump off a cliff and kill herself with a piece of glass and all kind of nonsense and all kind of rubbish.
But I think you know how Mariah is, like, she would just see something as a joke and
exactly.
I feel like it's my wrist or I might just jump off a cliff.
What happened was that the thing with slitting her wrist, that was totally fake. She believed, and with killing herself and stuff, she believes in God. She's a God fearing person, so she would never take her life. God will take her life when he is ready, okay? All those things about killing herself, people say that, it is said that she was like, I will kill myself. I'm not ready to take on this world. I can't take it on anymore. Okay, what happened was that when she was talking, she just said she can't handle it anymore. I mean, when you say you can't handle it anymore, she said things like she can't take it anymore. She just wants to be alone and like when nobody else is and stuff like that. She probably did mention, she did mention things like jumping off a cliff and stuff like that, but she didn't mention it in that way and to that degree. Like, she didn't say, I want to kill myself. Okay, she did not say that, people. An appearance on TRL were clad only in a t-shirt. First thing, if she was only in a t-shirt, you would see from her waist down, and that would have been worse than being only clad in a t-shirt. People would be like, oh my gosh, she saw this and that.
Here happened, right? Carson Daly was, apparently he was hosting TRL.
Yes, at the time.
So he was hosting it, and then Audie Blue just hear Mariah's voice, right? And she's like, hi everybody, and then Carson Daly was like, oh my gosh, Mariah Carey, I can't believe my eyes, when in truth and fact,
okay, sorry about that, when in truth and in fact, he knew about it. It was announced to him. He had this thing in his ear. He knew about it already. What happened was that... Yes. Sorry about that interruption. As I was saying, he knew about it. There was this thing in his ear. He knew about it, that it was going on. He just made it so surprising because, you know, it was supposed to be like a surprise appearance. Like on the VMAs and stuff, there are surprise appearances. It was a surprise appearance.
Wait, what? It was a surprise appearance?
Thank you, audience. The audience is very helpful today. Thank you, audience. Because, I mean, okay, come on. She has been on TRL in the past, and she has done some wacky and crazy things. It's just that at this time, with the failure of glitter and stuff like that.
In a way, it was
kind of
like a trend.
Exactly. It's a normal trend.
Yeah, for it to just
and
be
handing
crazy.
Out ice cream and stuff like that. Well, Ogo handed out to the crowd and stuff like that. What's so wrong about that? It's just that...
They made something big because they were just looking for everything to add on.
Exactly, to add on, to make her look bad.
Oh my gosh, she came out, she stripped. At that time, she was recording things like Loverboy. In Loverboy, if I'm not mistaken, she was dressed almost exactly like that.
Scantily clad, hello.
Exactly. So she took off the shirt, she was dressed exactly like she was, or almost exactly like
exactly.
she was.
Exactly, and she took off the shirt and stuff.
And she gave the shirt to Carson, and she just started to handle popsicles. And I don't see that anything was wrong with what she did. It was just because at that time, she had a meltdown.
Yes.
Because, quote-unquote, because, you know, she had that, I think people were just saying, well, okay, you know, she had a meltdown, so she's just so emotionally detached, she doesn't know what she's doing.
Exactly, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't just say she had sex with Carson Daly on the TV one time because of how she's acting. People say it was raunchy and stuff. I mean, okay, probably the way she's taking it off was very suggestive, but the thing she'd act and stuff, she was talking normally and everything.
And she was
and
naked,
she's excited.
So.
Thank you, she was on naked, she was clothed, hello. A family could have watched that.
Just dusting the dirt off of our feet, and okay, good. So following all of these failures, including her meltdown and blah blah blah, Virgin and Carey parted ways early in 2002 with the label paying her $28 million.
And that is where the record comes in. That was a record amount for
breaking a contract.
Exactly, record amount $28 million.
Yeah, that is a lot. That's almost $30 million.
And that's in the U.S.
Exactly.
And that was about now. The money is about at the same level. But, I mean, $28 million, trust me, in U.S., that's a lot.
$28 million is a lot of money to pay off a contract. That's
yes.
a lot of money, because normally don't... But I guess, considering the size of the original contract, which was $80 million,
yes.
allegedly, I guess they would have to pay her.
And I think she was supposed to do four other CDs.
Yeah,
so, you know,
yeah, the contract was for Glitter
CDs,
and then five CDs.
Yes, that is amounting to a lot
yeah.
of money she could have made.
So that spring, she found a new home with Island Def Jam, which is currently still her record label, where she set up her own label, Monarcy Music.
It's like Monarch, but it's C's in capitals because
yeah.
of MC Mariah Carey.
So Monarcy Music. In December, she released her ninth album, Charm Bracelet, which failed to become a success.
What they mean by that is that if it's become as successful as other
exactly.
albums, I think the album did tell over a million copies or something around that.
I think it went at least platinum.
It went one time. I think it platinum at least once.
So it failed to become as successful as her previous albums.
Yes.
Although she took nearly 3 years for a follow-up, Carrie found a hit with 2005's Emancipation of Mimi, her most successful record in years.
Obviously.
I just think Mariah is such an amazing person and so brave because I define a true star. I told you this before. I define a true star as, you know, coming from the bottom and going on top. A lot of people say, you know, oh, well, a real star is when you come from the bottom and you get to the very top. But I think a true star and a very brave person is somebody who has been at the bottom and has reached the top and then has gone back to the bottom and then come back again.
Hello, the Emancipation Mimi.
I think she's really a true star in that sense. She has been at the bottom and been on top and then been at the bottom again. So she experienced life from both sides. Because, I mean, they say, you know, oh, well, when you're at the bottom, it's something so bad. But I don't think you really, when you're at the bottom, you don't really notice how hard it is. Because, you know, when you reach on top, everything is fine and dandy, but when you're on top and then you go back down to the bottom, you really are hit hard with the realization of how harsh the world could be.
I mean, anything about it, since she took very long to make the CD, must admit, but look how good the CD is. And nobody knew. There were no rumors, there were nothing. Everybody just forgot about her, so nobody knew she was making it. And when she came out with it and it was this good, whew, that was excellent.
Yeah. So that's mainly her biography there.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. It wasn't really detailed. Probably one of these days we might go more into detail because we actually have information about each of the years of her life. Well, actually, not really each year, but each time period of her life. Like 2001, 2004, and 1997 to 2000, and blah, 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 like that.
Yes.
So probably another time we'll hopefully be able to talk about that in more detail. Okay, what else can we talk about? Let us find who. I want to talk about the awards.
Go straight down.
Okay, right there. Good, so her awards, and there are too many awards to name, but we'll try and name the more prominent ones.
Yeah.
So in 1990, well, we'll list all the awards because this year she didn't have that many, but for a debut year, for, you know, the year you're coming
1997,
out.
1997, 2005.
So, but this is amazing, you know, 1990. That crawled in my blood. Gosh.
Woo! Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead.
Okay, good. So in 1990, Carrie receives two. What happened, David? David had, what you had there?
It was a piece of sponge. And
David had like this piece of. Like David had someone who was rubbing it on the desk and was making this weird song and it was kind of giving me goosebumps. Anyway,
okay, let's go.
Carrie received two Grammys in 1991 BMI Songwriters Award. Okay. Oh wait, no. Sorry, blah. This was supposed to be a speech there. Okay. So Carrie received two Grammys in 1991. She also received the BMI Songwriters Award because she writes all of her own music. She received
Best Song for Vision of Love and Love Takes Time in the Grammys.
And then Soul Train Awards, she won the R&B Urban Contemporary New Artist, R&B Urban Contemporary Single Female for Vision of Love, and the R&B Urban Contemporary Album Female for Mariah Carey. Which I think those songs these two, the contemporary single and contemporary album, sound like big awards.
Yes, yes.
So in 1991, she got at the American Music Awards, she got favorite female artist of soul and R&B. I mean, you know, in your second year out, people are voting for you. You're as favorite female artist. So you know, you are big.
No, I mean, getting all of that.
Okay, she
got a lot of things at the Billboard Music Awards.
And
the BMI Pop Awards.
So, but 1991, she got a lot of awards that year. In 92, she got the top female album artist for Emotions at the Billboard Music Awards. She got the top female single artist and the Hot 100 singles female artist. And in 93, she got a few American Music Awards again. 94, more American Music Awards. let's see. In 95, more American Music Awards. Best Album for Daydream. Best Single for Fantasy. Best Female Singer. She got more BMIs. And then in 96, she got Billboard Music Awards. She had a lot of awards.
Oh my gosh. Okay. If when you all email us, we could give you the entire list, because trust me, it's a long list.
Yeah.
And we can, y'all could ask some questions about these certain awards or certain years and stuff, and we could go into detail into it in other shows when you all email.
Okay, let's talk about 2005 then.
Yeah, because we're more.
But 2005 is the year she has received most awards.
Yes.
So far in her career, her comeback, so they say. So in 2005, she got Recording Academy honors. She got the American Heroes Award for ongoing contribution to the Fresh Air Fund, which is a charity. Oh, yes. And before we should mention that she also received, I think in 2004 or 2003, I'll tell you. I think it was in 2003. She got, oh good. She got the Recording Industry Association of America Commemorative Award, also known as the Blue Diamond Award, for more than 100 gold, platinum, and multi-platinum certifications throughout her professional career.
Look at that.
I think this was the year that she was pronounced the biggest selling female artist of all time.
Yeah.
With 150 million albums. I think that's when she was, when they gave her that award.
Yeah, people say that was her breakdown period.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So 2005, she has a lot. I really can't name all of 2005. Them.
She won some at the AMAs, at Billboard,
at MTV India, at Best International Female Pop
MTV
Act.
India, look at that. And then MTV Japan,
VMAs.
And then Soul Train, Teen Choice Awards, Teen People Awards, Vibe Awards.
But you have to remember, 2005 was the year of We Belong Together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was something huge.
Yeah, trust me.
So, okay, good. So, and in 2006, she racked up some awards there. She had 3 Grammys for Best Contemporary R&B Album for the Emancipation of Mimi, Best R&B Song, We Belong Together, Best Female R&B Vocal Performance, We Belong Together.
Look at that.
We Belong Together already raked in a lot of things.
Exactly. Here. And she won First Lady of Terrell. And next year, she'll get her own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Yes.
Only now? I actually thought I should have had one already.
Me too. When I saw that, I was like, wait, she doesn't have one. But, I mean, yeah. She's going to get one next year. You'll see that.
Okay, so let's talk about her discography. In 1990, she released Mariah Carey. 91 was Emotions. 92 was Unplugged. 93 Music Box. 94 Merry Christmas. 95 Daydream. She skipped out to 1996. So for 5 years consecutively, she had an album each year.
Yeah.
97 Butterfly. 98 Number One. 99 Rainbow. 2001. So she skipped out another year there. She released Glitter, so to say, as a soundtrack.
Yeah.
2001, she also released Greatest Hits. 2002, Charm Racer. 2003, The Remixes, which actually is the lowest selling CD of her whole career. The
yes,
Remixes.
I mean, you notice how nobody talks about that in the biography, yet it is.
Apparently, it only got like 200 and something thousand.
Yeah.
I think it was a real crappy, a real crappy performance. And then 2005, of course, Mimi
and the Edge Platinum Edition.
I doubt she's bringing out anything in 2006, because right now she's touring everything.
Yes.
But you never know, probably in 2007 you could probably look forward to something from her.
Yes.
Hopefully.
That is true.
Because if you look at it, she has brought out things, I mean, almost every year, or probably only missing for the most 2 years in between. So hopefully next year we could actually expect something new from her.
Yes.
That'd be nice. I really like that. So let's talk about her singles. In 1990, her number one singles were Vision of Love, Love Takes Time. This is the US though, number one in the US. Vision of Love, Love Takes Time, and Someday in 1991. Oh wait, no. Vision of Love and Love Takes Time was in 1990. And in 1991,
yeah.
There was Someday, I Don't Wanna Cry, and Emotions. 92, I'll Be There, featuring Trey Lorenz. 93 was Dream Lover and Hero. 94, Without You,
but
and Fantasy.
In,
Without
1994
You.
1994 was Only Without You, and that came number 3 in the US.
Oh, yes, sorry, yes, that was number 3 in the US. 95 was Fantasy and One Sweet Day. Those were both number 1.
Yes.
96, Always Be My Baby. 97, Honey. 98, My All. 99, Heartbreaker with JC. 2000, Thank God I Found You. And 2005, We Belong Together, and Don't Forget About Us. So her number one singles now amount to 17, tying with Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
17, tying with Elvis Presley. And I think she only needs, how many more to be the Beatles?
Three.
Three more.
To equalize, and I'm at 4 more to beat them, 21.
It will happen. It will happen before her career ends. It will. And then the Beatles are no longer here. So although they were a great band, there's no way that they could have any more number ones.
Yep.
So eventually she will be them. Eventually it will happen. It will. I have faith that it will. Now we want to talk about the breathiness.
Yes.
Was. No, it is going.
Okay. No. Okay.
Oh my God.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yes, it is because
she got a new style of singing. Around Glitter. Was it around Glitter or Charm Bracelet?
Yes.
She used a lot of breathiness in her voice.
Yes.
And if you listen to Bring It On Your Heartbreak, I'll play a piece for you. The beginning, the first verse is extremely, extremely breathy.
Yes.
So let's play a piece of that for y'all. Actually heard the breathiness in her voice.
Really?
So now we want to discuss her voice, right? Let's find voice. You got the best of me. Can't you see?
And you must admit, that song is very nice. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it's very subtle and...
It was
and
a nice remake.
End,
I mean, remake.
Yeah,
I like it.
That's true.
Okay, so David, you go on with this.
Okay, the voice. Okay, there are plenty people that want to have Mariah Carey's voice. There are plenty voice trainers, and there are many things that people don't know or don't understand about the voice, which is true because, currently the voice is the least understood part of the human body. Yes, that is true because the thing is, everybody's voice is different. I mean, come on. So there's no way you could classify voices and stuff like that. But there's a general way to group stuff like that, and I will talk about it. People say that Mariah Carey is a coloratura soprano because of her vocal range. Her vocal range is, okay, for people who don't know, because it's a very detailed explanation and talk. A vocal range is the place where you could go your lowest notes and your highest note. The place in between that is your vocal range. You know that you can't sing. Not hit, but sing. Some people like to include whole notes that they hit, which is just, some people can't stay up there, which is singing. And that's a very big difference you need to consider. Okay, Minnie Riperton, everybody says she gets her greatest influence from her because Minnie Riperton is all the whistle and everything. And if you listen closely enough, you would notice that there is some similarity. And Minnie Riperton does have a pretty big range, although Mariah's range is bigger than his. The technique for singing is different in each person. Right now, we're focusing on Mariah Carey, so that's what I'll talk about. Starting with the registers of the voice. The first register of the voice is the chest register, which is what I'm talking right now, the low notes or the bass notes. The next register, which is debated upon as to whether it exists or not, but it actually does exist for those people who think it doesn't. That is the mixed voice or head voice. That is like when you go high, but it's still in chest voiced. And then the next register is falsetto, or head and superhead. That is where you just go into falsetto. You know, everybody knows what falsetto is. That's like when you try to sing high, but you can't, so you go into falsetto. So, when you sing like
give them a taste of superhead.
Okay, alright.
Like,
so,
like We Belong Together, the remix.
Okay, oh my gosh. Okay, I'll sing all of that for you all later. falsetto, superhead, and then the last register of the voice, which is the highest, which is believed to be the most rare, is
the
whistle register.
The most
register.
Difficult, of course.
I'll discuss all of that. It's the whistle register. Chest is like the low notes, like, ah. And then head voice is like, ah. like kind of like that. Falsetto is like super hen, which is like kind of higher practice, you know, something like that. And whistle is, oh my god, oh my god, there is a, okay, let me see. And whistle is, you know, and yes, okay, I could sing an all right sexy voice because I've been trained under the quote unquote Mariah Carey regime. Right, okay, going ahead. The technique for chest is, everybody knows, I mean, you're talking it, everybody knows how to do it. There's no danger in singing like that, but there's a danger in singing too low. And you, some people mistake going low for glottal fry, which is like when you talk like this and like that. That is glottal fry. Now, just because it's saying fry doesn't mean that it's frying your glottis. your glottal.
It's not frying your glottal.
That doesn't mean you're damaging yourself, but it's not a, it's a good practice in warming up and cooling down, but it's not really used that much because it's believed to be dangerous. It is a little bit, but so try to stay away from it. And then when you sing in head, there could be soft head, which is what Mariah was singing in Bringing On the Heartbreak. You know, there's a lot of breath in it. It's very breathy.
And very high for chest
voice. Very high for chest voice. Trust me, it's very high for chest voice. I'll talk about registers just now. And then there's a difference. There's a very big difference between singing with power and singing loudly and just shouting. It's very hard to distinguish between the three because, as I said, the voice is very complex. We don't know all about it in a scientific world. Singing with power is when you just naturally sing loudly, like Patti LaBelle. She naturally sings loudly. Belting is when you actually like sing loud and you I don't want to use the word force because that sounds bad, but you actually cause yourself to sing loudly. But and that is very dangerous for your voice. You should try to stay away from it. And shouting is when you just shout, which is obviously dangerous for your voice. And one note to make, I am not a licensed vocal teacher, but I can give you, but I can help you. And don't take everything I'm doing here and try it at home because I'm not there with you to tell you what to do. Anyways, after you go to that head, you from the head voice, you go into falsetto, which is just a totally different aspect of the voice, and it's just, you just hear breath. And then sometimes you hear notes. It's just like total breath, like, you know, it's very soft and subtle anyway. And from that, you go higher and you generally go louder to superhead, which is what I did before. And then superhead, as I said, is most operatic. So you would sing like that. And then afterwards, you go into whistle. And as I said, that's very, I believe it to be very rare. But what is rare is the ability for it, for you to use it and for it not to damage your voice. This is the most not understood part of the voice.
Mm-hmm.
The methods to, there's no, as said in the previous episode, there's no correct method of using it. There are many different methods because there are many different voices, but there are methods that help it not to damage your voice. Singing on a whole damages your voice, so don't think that doing whistle register alone damages your voice or cause, but it does kind of cause most damage because it's most troubling on the voice to vibrate at those frequencies. Frequency is what sound is measured in, and I'm going to now include notes, and I'm going to include it the American way, quote unquote, because originally notes are not said like this, but an octave goes from C to C, which is C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C. And there are different numbers for different octaves, octave 1, octave 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and they go on. But usually octaves are used in voice, so they're usually limited from 1 to 10. Although the 10th octave does not quote-unquote exist, because since humans only have a range of hearing generally from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, the 10th octave goes above 20,000 hertz. Mariah Carey, there's some debate about her lowest notes because, like in You and I, which she performs live, in My All, and many other songs, which is so much that I can't list it right now. She does very low notes. She does A2 and G2.
And You're So Cold.
Yes, You're So Cold. Yes, in the beginning, when she's like, and then she goes ahead singing, that is very low notes. So you could safely say that her lowest note is a G2, around there, a G2, a G#2, let's say safely. But you could say a G2, and sometimes she does hit F2, but you have to listen closely for that. Going up, her chest and head and stuff stops at G#5, which she does in I Only Wanted and Subtle Invitation and some other songs. Can't remember them right now. So that's G#5.
But in Circles on Emancipation, in the background, in the interlude, you actually hear it in A5. So
that is true. When she's like, everything is you, how can I pull through? When she's like, pull, that is a E5 thing. So, you know.
Like she goes really high.
Yeah, she goes really high. Should we put a sample for them? Like,
yeah, okay.
When I'm finished.
With a sample of what? Of a note?
Yeah, we'll play the sample of the notes when I'm finished, so you could see what I'm talking about.
Wait, like what notes?
Because just you can arrange.
Play it now if they want.
Well, no, I need them to know all of them, and then they
I'll
name them over, and then they'll hear what it sounds like.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Because this is also for beginners and experts. After chest, she goes into falsetto. She rarely uses falsetto, because it's very difficult to tell the difference between falsetto and the breathy head that she does. But I could tell it. I could tell the difference, and trust me, she doesn't do much of it. And then she goes mainly into whistle straight from there. She goes from falsetto to from head to super hen, and then just whistle. She rarely uses super hen. She might do some falsetto, and then she'll go straight into the whistle. From G#5, she goes to G#7, and that is whistle. So when you look at it, her full range is about a G#2 to a G#7. And she has a 5-octave range, people, not 6, not 7, not 4, not 3. A 3-octave range, people say a 3-octave range is rare. What they mean is a 3-octave range in chest voice, which is what plenty people don't say, so people misunderstand it and think it's all the registers. Because in music, before in the olden days, people would say that you sing and count your octaves in the chest voice. But you cannot do that. People cannot only sing in chest, they sing in head, super head, and whistle. Or the whistle is most right. So when she would sing, she would go from your G#2 to a G#5, then a G#7. So that's G#2 to G#3, G#3 to G#4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6, 6 to 7. So that is 5 octaves, counted, people. Okay? So she has a total of 5 octaves exact. I mean, there is some variation because she has sounded like if she has done A7s, and she has sounded like if she has done F2s. I mean, yes, A7s. I can't list the song right now, but I think it's one song because she rarely goes above G#7. But when you look at it, G#2 to G#7, and right now we will play all the notes for you. These are computer generated notes, so they're perfect notes. Well, yes, they're perfect notes.
Yeah, they are perfect, actually.
So we are going to play it complimentary musical tuner.
So I play every note for them?
Yes,
every
I will note. Call out the notes, and we will play it for you.
Wait, but I'm not too sure if they will be able to hear you over the thing.
Oh, okay. Wait, just now. I will have to do it because I will have to stop. Okay, we'll cut out all of this, but anyways.
No, okay.
What I'll have to do is I'll have to call a note, play it, and then stop, and then go to the next note.
Oh, so, okay. You know what you could do? Like play the note, but then raise the volume.
Yeah. Okay. G#A#.
Yeah.
Okay. Right now, I'm going to play a G#2, but the G#2 is not in existence. It's really A#2, if you know what music is. So right now, I'm going to play that for you. Right, so that is how low she could go. I mean, obviously, it doesn't sound like that, but that's how low she could go. And then her next note, any chest voice, how high she could go, is a G-sharp 5, right?
Which is very high for any normal person.
Trust me, that is very high. So right now I'm going to play a G-sharp 5.
I can't even do it.
Oh my gosh, that is really high. And then from G-sharp 5, she goes to G-sharp 7. And
oh Lord.
Okay, if your microphone, if your speakers are loud, I'm advising you to turn it down now, but this is her highest note.
I can't even whistle it.
Yes, that is a G-sharp 7. So in total, the G-sharp 2 to G-sharp 7. The techniques she uses are personally her own techniques. She has training from her mother, but she does not formally train with somebody. She teaches herself. She's self-trained. All the techniques, I could give you some help in them, but most of them are personally hers, so I can't say what they are. But she could, okay, so that is how she sings, right? And concerning her voice loss, what everybody else is saying, yes, voice loss. From the beginning, her voice has sounded the same to the end from now.
Yeah.
If you look at his first album and the last album, present album, Emancipation Mimi and Mariah Carey, she does high notes. In the Emancipation Mimi, she does the E5 that we were talking about. In Mariah Carey, I think she does a G5 in one of these songs. So if you look at
she
it.
She does them a lot. She does Invasion and I Don't Want to Cry.
Yeah, she does in a lot of songs, you see. And they're very powerful singing. What people say is voice loss. What people said that she had voice loss was in her quote-unquote breakdown period when she was singing very breathy, which is just head. Because in the end of the songs, apparently they don't hear that. They don't hear her hitting all the high notes. I Only Want It from Tom Reset. If you listen to that, in the beginning it's soft. That's the only thing they talk about. They don't talk in the end when she does the G-sharp 5. Hello, people. She sings that whole thing. So there's no such thing as voice loss.
She does a G-sharp in our Mine Again.
Is that Mine Again? Hello. Oh, wait. Mine Again. What was the high note? Okay, if you'll listen to Mine Again at the ending where she's like, maybe you could be my, and then she does say, and then she sings that whole thing. At the ending, raise up your speakers real loud because she jumps an octave from F6 to F7.
And she only really ever hit F7 in two of her studio performances before All In Your Mind. She didn't All In Your Mind.
Yes.
And she did in Emotions.
Exactly, because Emotions, I think, is the only song where she reaches G7 and G-sharp 7.
In a live
7.
Performance.
Yes.
But her highest recorded note ever was in F-sharp, an F7.
Yes, that is exactly
Actually, let's play All In Your Mind for them.
We're going to play All In Your Mind for you. But before we play it, what was I talking about? okay, sorry about that. But anyways, so that is basically she had no voice loss. I mean, singing overall it damages your voice. From this time, there must have been some type of change in her voice. That's when you hear her speak, she speaks kind of scratchy, so to speak. She speaks kind of scratchy or something like that. But I mean, hello. So singing generally takes away the quality of your voice, but it's still the same. She sings still the same. It's very good. And if you have any comments, email us. So right now we're going to play what? All In Your Mind? Yes, Your Mind.
Which I love the song, but we can't play the whole song because we don't want to get sued.
Oh!
So we'll just play the part where, we'll play a little before and then the part where she hits the F-sharp 7.
Yes.
She says, it's real higher.
Yeah.
Let's play F-sharp 7. Let's generate F-sharp 7 for them to hear.
Okay, I'll play an F-sharp
7
for
Not F-sharp
7, you.
Sorry, I'm saying F-sharp 7, it's just F7.
Alright, sorry. I'm going to play F7 for you, and this is what she does in All of Your Mind. It is mostly in the background, although she does do some in the foreground, so I'm going to play it for you now. Okay, sorry, that was like way too loud, so we nearly got that one, but
okay,
that's an F7. Yeah, that was
this
an
F7. This is an F7. So, okay, let's play All In Your Mind for them. I don't know if you all notice, but we try to amplify the end because she does
a G5 in her chest.
In her chest, at the very end of that, is like.
Yes.
Yeah. Right now, my voice is not feeling good.
Yeah. So you can't do it in chest now, but that's what she did.
But yeah, so that's what she did, and so the same thing we were talking about, you know, chest.
Yes, and her voice and everything. So to wrap up on the voice.
Yeah.
Right. So that's basically how her voice is. That's basically how the voice is. G-sharp 2 to G-sharp 7, 5 octaves, all the registers, including whistle, which I said is pretty rare.
Should we play Subtle Invitation for them?
Subtle Invitation. That's for the G-sharp 5.
Yes,
because I believe you all never heard the G-sharp 5 that she did in the chest. We all heard the high notes, and if we play any low notes?
No,
in a song.
We'll play You're So Cool. We'll play the
You're So Cool.
You're So Cool.
Yes. We'll play that.
Okay, actually, yeah, let's go and play. Okay, so this is the one I'm going to play. Is the G-sharp 5, and it's from Subtle Invitation. Okay, so now we'll play You're So Cool, where she hit some of her lowest notes,
which is around G2, and I think there's like
she went to an F sharp.
Yes, F sharp too.
She says, "Lord only knows," and on the nose she goes to an F sharp. Like, "Lord only knows," like
yes.
that. So you have to listen carefully for that. So here it is. Yes, those were some of her lowest notes. Actually, I think F sharp 2 is the lowest note I've ever heard from
her.
Yes,
yes.
So, yeah. So, and then we wanted to play Superhead for you, and she does this in the We Belong Together remix.
Yes.
She actually does Superhead.
Which one exactly it is? I forgot which one it is, but she performed it live already last day. I forgot. It was at award show.
At the VMAs.
Yes, the VMAs.
And then she did it for New Year's Eve, remember?
Oh, yes,
I mean,
that
New Year's,
is true.
Just New Year's night.
Yes.
So yeah, she actually, it's Superhead. It isn't whistle, it's just very high, very high head voice. So let us play a clip of that for you. Yes, so that is her Superhead.
Okay, all right.
So that is generally her whole Superhead songs, or her Superhead on the whole songs.
Yes.
So that's it. I think that wraps up the show, because the show is extremely long.
More than 2 hours.
And I guess y'all could listen to this in parts.
Yes,
well,
please
then
do.
It's a bit too late to mention that, because it comes down to the end
anyway. Exactly.
But so hopefully I can have David on the show more often, because it was real fun to record with him.
I would
him.
Be honored to come back.
Yes, and I want him to come back, you know, so who knows, maybe eventually we'll be able to work out this thing where it will actually be both of us on every show,
just,
you know, kind of fluctuation, as you know, so maybe it could be both of us on the show, so we'll see what happens. So again, thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you very much, and I was very glad to be here and to talk to you all.
And I'm sure everybody was glad to hear you. So don't forget to visit the website at mimicast.blogspot.com and send in emails to mimicast@gmail.com.
Exactly. You could ask on anything at all.
Yes.
Mariah, you ask for the voice, the ones I talked on, what James talked on, you could ask anything.
Just email. Ideas about shows, so at least we could have
suggestions and ideas,
listener feedback about suggestions and ideas that we could do on shows. Okay, So again, thank you for listening, and we are going now.
Yes. Okay. Goodbye.
We took like 5 hours to record this.
Well, yes.
Because of all the tralala. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think we told them.
Oh no! No, y'all have to listen to the show. There's not. I think you mentioned it before.
No. But then we have to delete that part.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh.
What happened? Right? David and I were recording, and then the program we were using decided to shut down us, and we had nothing saved. But I have this on with the program. I could recover files, but it recovers them in small parts, and then like they're all out of sync and all that. So we had to go and redo a lot of things
and missing parts.
Yeah, and retouch, and oh my gosh, it was a lot. So at least the show is finally done, and even though it's the longest show, and I bet it will be the longest show in all of them,
Oh my gosh, yes.
But you know, at least it was fun to record, and we hope you all had fun too.
Okay then.
Okay, bye
everyone. Goodbye!
Thanks for listening to this episode of the unofficial Mariah Carey podcast. Don't forget to send all emails to mimicast@gmail.com. And also, don't forget that this is an unofficial podcast. All the views expressed are not those of Mariah Carey, any of her spokespersons, family, or friends.